Welcome to Journals of the Willing from the Tumbling Saber team, a part of the Star Wars Commonwealth Podcast Network. Take your first step into a larger world by checking out the Commonwealth on the web at starwarscommonwealth.com, on iTunes, Facebook, and Twitter. Hey everyone, welcome back to Journals of the Willing. My name's Kyle.
And I'm Steve.
All right. So, Steve, it's A New Hope's 40th birthday. Happy birthday to A New Hope.
Happy birthday.
the holiest birthday of them all. So, we've spoken about it on Tumbling Saber, but we didn't get your thoughts. So, what does this movie mean to you? How has this played a role in your life?
So as our listeners know, and as you guys know, so Star Wars came a little later in my life, but of course A New Hope was the first one I ever saw. You know, for me, you know, when I think Star Wars, I think A New Hope. It really it was the first one my fiance showed me, so it has a lot of sentimental value to it. And I just remember, you know, sitting there, you know, in college, really seriously watching it for the first time rather than it just kind of being on TV. And, you know, I really kind of just knew it through the toys and the pop culture references before that. So it really, you know, sitting there in college, probably stressed out on finals, and it made me feel like a kid again. So I, you know, there's a strong sentimental connection because of my fiance, and it really just kind of tapped into that childhood side of myself. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of the same. But it was the first movie I saw in the mid 80s, and just from the opening frame of the movie, that's sort of my go-to cliche, is that from the opening frame, it just hooked me. You know, the hook went right down my throat and I still can't get it out. It's just probably the single most influential piece of art, cinema, whatever you want to call it, it's the biggest influence on me in my entire life. It's been the through line from the time I was a child up until now, where I'm just an older child. Yeah, everything about that movie just screams brilliance to me. And it's 40 years old, which is a really old movie. You know, you think back to when you were a kid and you think about watching a 40-year-old movie and, ah, look how crappy this is. But not so with A New Hope. It just gets better. It just becomes more of a masterpiece as the years go by.
Absolutely. I think back to movies from when I was growing up in the 90s, and they don't hold up. You know, those who know me know I was obsessed with Power Rangers. You go back, you watch the Power Rangers movie from 95, nothing. Does not hold up, you know, but Star Wars, you know, holds up 40 years.
It is a cultural signpost. It is just one of the seminal moments in pop culture history. Just this movie that just captivated millions of people. And just the phenomenon that it's become, it just boggles the mind that there are just so many people like me and you and everybody listening that just cannot, almost literally cannot get enough of this stuff. It's just what a testament to what George Lucas did 40 years ago.
I mean, can you imagine a world without Star Wars? Like, if that movie had not come out, how different would just Hollywood and everything that we consume in, like, nerd culture be?
Oh, just the number of things that we consume that were deeply influenced by Star Wars, I probably can't even count them all. I probably don't even know about how, I probably can't even tell how strongly influenced the things I love outside of Star Wars were actually influenced by George Lucas and Star Wars. I don't even know. And then, man, to answer your question, I cannot picture my life without Star Wars. It would just, I mean, I'm sure if in an alternate universe where there is no Star Wars, I'm sure I've found something else to do. But boy, oh boy, what a barren existence for me without Star Wars.
Luckily, we don't have to imagine it.
And yeah, and if you know the gods willing, we won't have to think about that for a long, long time.
Nope, the wheels are churning over at Lucas.
Oh yeah. So, what are you reading? What's going on with your in your comic book life right now?
Yeah, so I run into the unfortunate habit of skipping a week or two at a time. So I kind of go to my local comic store. Well, it's not very local. It's like 30 minutes. I have one closer, but you know what it is? I went to this place maybe a year and a half ago. The guy was so awesome. I just kind of fell in love with the store, so I kind of just stayed loyal. So I pulled up a giant stack. I have to catch up on my X-Men titles. All caught up on Star Wars, save for Poe Dameron. I'm a couple issues behind. But reading X-Men Blue, Gold, Generation X just came out. I have to crack open the Jean Grey title. Iceman's starting pretty soon, along with like Cable. And the Amazing X-Men is the they recycle a lot of them. That one's going to be a team up with Logan, Old Man Logan. I think Gambit's going to be in that team.
Yeah, I think it's I'm pretty sure it's Astonishing X-Men.
Maybe they're bringing back Astonishing. Maybe it is. Because I always get confused because it's Astonishing. I know Joss Whedon had brought that back.
Yeah.
Then that ended, and I guess they're going to bring it back again.
I think so. Yeah, I think Charles Soule is writing it.
That's it. That is the one. Because I was actually having a conversation with my comic guy today about, like, I knew Charles Soule was writing an X-Men. I just couldn't remember which one.
Yeah, but I'm looking at my pull list here online. It's Astonishing X-Men.
Okay, awesome. All right, yeah, I'm excited. Is that June? That's June, right?
Estimated release date, Wednesday, August 16th.
Oh, August. Oh, even longer.
So, I mean, you've got a full pull list.
Full pull list. Although I'm halfway through the first issue. I cracked open Aliens Dead Orbit is another series that I'm starting. Just started. I think issue 2 comes out next week. So I'm cracking through the first issue. I'm on kind of a Aliens high since the last movie came out, so I was like, I gotta jump into this, and it's pretty good so far.
Cool.
Yeah. What about you?
Well, I actually went and pared down my pull list today. I had added X-Men Blue and Gold and Astonishing to my pull list, but I didn't know that both of those books, the Blue and Gold, were both twice monthly. I had no idea. Yeah. And that overwhelms me. So I will end up picking these up in trade, because I have issues 1 through 3 of each, and I've started reading them, and they're really good. I feel comfy and cozy with this cast of characters. They're all faces I recognize, save for a couple. But I've limited time for reading. I could barely keep up with our reading schedule for this show. And you know, right. to lump in, you know, 3 more X-Men books, I was like, you know what? I can't do this. I'm still reading Scott Snyder's Batman issue, dating back to issue 45, which is from, I think, November of 2015, before The Force Awakens came out. Oh, I'm pretty backed up in some cases.
Are you doing that in trade? Or are you doing that in
No, those singles? Are single issues that I just never got around to reading. They've been sitting on my little night table next to my bed for a year and a half.
Oh, jeez.
I just never got around to reading them, because I'm always trying to shoehorn in a few extra pages of Star Wars, this and that, so we can do it on the show. And so the comics just keep piling up. You know, I kept up with Old Man Logan. But yeah, I just decided, you know what, I can't. I'm going to just amass a huge pile of books that I'm not going to read, so I'll do them in trade. That way I can just spend an afternoon and bang them all out at once.
That's kind of what you got to do. Like, I just kind of find that they pile up for me, but I kind of just find like a night in my schedule where I can kind of just sit and binge read. And I usually get through most of them by doing that.
Yeah. And you know what? I've come to appreciate the way having a bunch of trades look on a shelf. They just look so cool. So I'm probably going to do that with the X-Men going forward. And I've managed to wean myself off of many of the comic book websites where I would check out reviews and get spoiled on a lot of stuff. So now if I wait months and months before reading it, it's not going to bother me because I won't know what's happened. It'll just be as if it just came out.
Well, speaking of websites, that's a good segue. I have to recommend to our listeners, and I was mentioning this to you earlier, I think it's leagueofcomicgeeks.com, right? Let me send that. I'm going to check the messages I have for you, right? Yep, leagueofcomicgeeks.com. It's a website and an app you can get, and the app syncs with your account on the website, which is really cool. And it's just like a really awesome way to like keep track of everything that's coming out. You can have a pull list, a collection. You can mark things as read, add a wish list. And there's like a cool like social aspect. Like you can follow other people's pull lists, get recommendations. I think you can comment on people's pages.
That's pretty cool. I'm looking at this now. This seems pretty elaborate. I'm going to have to log in, create an account, and check this out. And we are not being sponsored by these guys. Sounds like we're like doing a paid ad for these guys. We're not.
I know. I told like I was like, speaking of, here's this website. No, totally not sponsored. You don't even have to pay for an account or anything. I don't even know how they keep it running. I don't see any ads. Maybe they get paid from the comic companies. I don't even know.
Possible. Yeah, that's a good question.
Because they definitely like,
explore this. That seems like an interesting way to keep track of what's going on out there.
Yeah, and there's like trending comics, like the most popular, so you could see what people are reading. If you go into like a specific series or an issue, it'll actually tally up all the users that are subscribing to that. So it's really cool. You can kind of keep your fingers on the pulse of the comic world that way.
Cool. So that's leagueofcomicgeeks.com. Very cool.
Yeah.
And I'm on the topic of trade paperbacks. I'm also stockpiling, never mind single issues, but I'm stockpiling trades of East of West and Saga. I'm so far behind on trades of those particular titles.
Mm-hmm. I got the first one for Saga. I still have to read it.
Oh, you're going to love it.
Oh, that's what everyone tells me. I'm so pumped. I got really just have to sit down and read. I actually picked up another trade for this series called Seven to Eternity. My comic guy recommended it. Kind of like a, looks like a dark fantasy, almost got like a Western look to it. Okay. Yeah, it looks pretty sweet. So I'm going to check that out. I'm going to read that. I'm actually trying to get into The Flash too. Because I've been binging the series on CW, because they're all on Netflix now. So I'm like halfway through the first season. I was like, they're kind of getting me now. I kind of have to. So I might pick that up with Rebirth.
Okay.
With the new DC. Are you reading any DC?
I'm reading Trinity.
Which one's that now?
That's Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman. I figure it's like Justice League Light, but with the three most important key players.
It's just them. All right. That's cool.
Yeah. I wanted to keep one foot inside the DC universe. I love both Marvel and DC. But again, I only have so much time and money to read like extensively. So I got to be very choosy about where, which title I pick up.
Do you, well, actually, I totally forget to mention this to people. Like, a lot of people don't realize that libraries carry trade paperbacks. So what I did was I purchased the first volume of The Flash for the Rebirth arc, but I reserved like the 8 volumes for the New 52 Flash. So I'm just going to read them so I know what's going on and then just bring them back to the library.
That's a great idea.
Yeah. So if you have a library near you, totally see, because I don't know if the libraries in Canada do this, but in New York, and I'm sure most of the US probably does it, there's like a library network. So for me, my county is Westchester, home of the X-Men. And they have like a library system. So if like your library doesn't carry it, you can like reserve it and they'll just get it shipped from another library in the system. So it's really handy. And there's an app that you can kind of keep track. They let you know when the book is there.
That's cool.
Yeah. So
I have no idea if you know, I don't even know really where my nearest library is, which is kind of shameful.
It's 2017. I think a lot of people don't know where their nearest library is.
Maybe not. I guess I have company there.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's seg into some Star Wars news here. A couple of new titles announced for comics in Star Wars, and I figure we'll start with Star Wars Jedi of the Republic Mace Windu. It's a 5-part series by Matt Owens and Dennis Cowan coming in August. What's your take on this one? Is this something you're going to pick up or are you going to pass?
By default, I pick up all Star Wars. but I will measure it based on my excitement. I'm not super excited for it, but something I noticed in the title, it seems like it might be something that they're going to spin off of, which I'm very curious about. You know, maybe we'll be able to spend some time with these different Jedi. Maybe if Mace Windu will be the first one. And yeah, they'll go into other, like, Kit Fisto, or...
That's almost like you're reading my notes here.
Oh, there we go.
I wonder the exact same thing. Is this part of an ongoing series of miniseries? Because my initial reaction was, what, really? Like, a big fat yawn for me on this. Like, I figured that we just got... Well, not just, but we have 6 seasons of the Clone Wars animated series, which heavily feature Mace Windu. Do we really need another 5-issue arc of Mace Windu? Pass was my initial reaction. Then I, you know, just like we were talking about with the name of the title, Jedi of the Republic, sounds like there's going to be more in the future. Like, I really would have liked to have seen, Kit Fisto or Shaak Ti, or even a Jedi that we had never heard of before, get a 5-parter. But maybe we still will. I'm going to hold out hope for that. So, I don't know. I'm going to wait and see. Maybe I'll wait and see what people think of this series before picking it up.
Right. And again, they're still kind of teetering within the timeline that they're so comfy in. You know, we have so many stories here. You know, like you said, with the Clone Wars series and, yeah, you know.
That's just it. It's like, geez, can you pick another era, please?
Right, we're definitely, you know, I think the fans are kind of craving some variety.
Yeah, it almost feels like a very, like, it's a layup, right? Oh, we'll just do Mace Windu in the Clone Wars. People love that. Or if people don't love that, people will buy that. It's just, yeah. Right. It's a very uninspired thing to me.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully it's a test run for something bigger.
Let's hope so.
Because maybe they won't just stick with the Jedi in this time. You know, maybe we'll start to see Jedi before the Clone Wars and before the prequels. And I don't know. Fingers crossed.
Oh, yeah. Fingers and toes crossed for sure. Like that. I hope that really doesn't end there. And then moving on, we're going to get something else that was rather predictable, if you ask me, but we're finally going to get the meeting between Cassian Andor and K2SO in a one-shot by Dwayne Swierczynski and Fernando Blanco, also coming out in August. And again, this one was inevitable, but my hat is off to Marvel for giving fans what they want. We all wanted this story, but also for not milking it for a 4 or 5-part miniseries. It's a one-shot, it's $5, 40 pages, thank you very much, and we all get to scratch the itch that we've had since Rogue One. So is this a pickup for you? I guess by default it's yes, but
yeah.
Are you more excited about this than the Mace Windu?
Yeah, I mean, definitely just to kind of piggyback off you were saying, you know, I totally agree. You know, I'm happy it's a one-shot. I think it'll be interesting to see their first meeting, but yeah, I don't think it needs to be something that's 4 or 5 issues. You know, I mean, it'll be interesting to see kind of like, are we going to see how K2SO gets reprogrammed? That'll be curious. I don't know. You know, it'll be interesting to see kind of how that unfolds.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm totally all in on this one. I'm going to pick that up the day it comes out, and I'm sure we'll talk about it right here. And with that, I think, is there anything else in Star Wars news that I missed?
As far as comics and novels, I think that brings us up to date.
Awesome. Well, that means we can discuss what everybody's paid good money to hear us talk about, which is Screaming Citadel Part 1, a one-shot setting up this promising new arc that's going to see Star Wars and Afrocross crisscross a bunch of times. What were your overall impressions of this?
Well, going in, you know, we were kind of pitched this idea of like the first gothic horror Star Wars story. So going in, I kind of had these, as a horror fan, I had these expectations like, oh God, what, like, you know, I got really excited. And, you know, I'd say, you know, tonally, I think they delivered. You know, I think it has a dark, not so much that it's about something darker as in the content, but the tonally, I think in the artwork, within the Citadel itself, it is definitely a much darker Star Wars story, and it has those horror elements. So I think they definitely delivered there. And you know me, I'm a huge Dr. Aphra fan. So anytime that she can kind of tango with the main crew, I'm in for it.
Yeah, I kind of got that. No, horror is not quite my thing, like this, like it is for you. But the mood, they just nailed it. Like the art throughout this book was outstanding. Like this might be the nicest, the best looking Star Wars book of them all that I've seen.
Oh yeah, and hold on, I just want to look up the artist so we can at least
Marco Cicchetto.
Marco Cicchetto, thank you. Yeah, I want to pay them credit.
Oh, throughout. I mean, from the first page to the last, it's just so well done. And who's on colors in this? Because they also did a great job. Andres Mosa. My hat is off to this whole team. And nobody gives any credit to the inker. But it seems like that it was also Marco Cicchetto in this. So definitely recommended for this book just for the art alone. It was just stunning for me throughout.
The colors, yeah, like you said, are beautiful. And, you know, since they are going with that gothic, like, you can see the influences with the Citadel. They're going with a Dracula gothic castle feel set in within this sci-fi universe. So you're getting a lot of blacks, a lot of reds. And it really pops. It works so well.
Well, if you flip through the book really quickly, there's this crazy, almost, the colors are almost segmented. Like the first couple scenes are like orangish brown in the bar. And then you flip to, there's a bit of green and blue. And then once they land on the planet where the Citadel is, it's definitely washed in greens and blues. And then as you get inside the Citadel, everything is just bathed in red. It's just so well done. The book is just so well segmented that way. I was just blown away. I've read the book a couple times, but I've flipped through it numerous times. Just taking in the art. I just can't recommend this book enough just on the art. But you know what? Not that we're going to do a page-by-page breakdown of this, but the first scene in this bar, like it screamed out to me. The bar scene, the bar brawl from Raiders of the Lost Ark. It just yelled it to me with one guy in over his head and then bailed out by somebody else. In this case, instead of Indy, it's sort of Aphra playing the role of Indy here, where she bails out Luke.
Right.
And, just put a smile on my face right from the start. And one of the things I noted also overall in this book is just throughout the book, the chemistry between Luke and Aphra just jumps off the page. Top notch.
100%. You know, it's like, you know, he's not quite sure if he should trust her. And, you know, she's kind of talking about Vader and just the kind of the back and forth is great. Totally agree.
Yep. And there's a great cut in that scene where the all the patrons in the bar, they're ready to throw down with Aphra and Luke, and they're oh, you know, look at all of us, and there's just two of you. Oh, and Aphra's like, oh, there's two of us, but also this Wookiee. And then the next panel is everybody's like flopped dead on the floor.
Yeah, shortly after.
And you know, Black Chrysanthem just trashed everybody. But yeah, we're talking about their chemistry between Luke and Aphra. But it's almost like a opposites attract thing, because Luke doesn't want anything to do with her. He knows who she is. I guess through the which arc was that? Well, Rebel Jail for one.
Mm-hmm.
Vader Down, I think, was Vader also Down. There.
Well, Vader Down into Rebel Jail, right? Correct. Or whatever was right after, yeah.
So Luke doesn't like Aphra at all. I mean, she is a scoundrel, right?
Yeah. Plus, she was working with Vader.
Well, yeah. So he wants to stay as far away from her as possible. But she entices him with the prospect of getting in touch with a Jedi Master who can complete his training. So, of course, Luke's ears are perked. And she also reveals that Vader has more than a passing interest in Luke. And Vader's not after Luke in the typical way that, well, we better get the guy who blew up the Death Star. You know, he's enemy number one. Like, Vader has a much deeper interest, and she basically outlines that to Luke.
Right, you can kind of see, you know, they're slowly edging to Empire Strikes Back, kind of just, you know, we have Vader, he knows that Luke's his son at this point, and now Luke is starting to kind of get these hints that there's something more there. So I'm curious to see how much further they're going to play with this almost dramatic irony. You know, it's something that we know that Luke doesn't, but they're toying with him.
Well, it's interesting you mention that, because, you know, in Empire, when Vader says, you know, search your feelings, you know it to be true. We're seeing those little points in time in this 3-year gap now where Luke can think back, oh, when Aphra told me that Vader was after me, that's why. Or, you know, I think you know, there was a couple of times where Luke and Vader have met, where Luke could have called back on that instance when he's out on the ledge and on Cloud City going, God damn it. Like, I'm searching my feelings and he is right. Just because these little points in time in this comic book series are feeding into that.
Oh, it's so well crafted.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, so Aphra, she's pretty much, well, she's obviously as reckless as she is, she's no dummy. And she knows that Luke, being the guy who blew up the Death Star, he didn't do that through skill or by luck. She knows that the Force is with him and that he's more or less a Jedi in training. He's not going to turn down the opportunity to contact the Jedi Master. She knows he's got nobody to teach, or she knows that he's got nobody to learn from. So, you know, she's pretty much got him, right?
Yeah. You know, he's kind of doing that tug of war in his mind. He, you know, he doesn't want to, but there's that, you know, part of him inside that's like, yeah, that's pulling him there.
It's the offer he can't refuse.
Exactly.
So Aphra's, to that point, Aphra's collected this artifact, which is, you know, it essentially looks like a big kyber crystal. And I don't know if that's what it is. I'm assuming it is. But it contains the essence, the consciousness of an old Jedi Master. Unnamed. But it's something that she picked up from the Ordu Aspectu. We talked about that, I think, briefly last time we got together. But do you want to just sort of very briefly re-explain who they are?
Or right. What that is? Yeah. So they were a group of Force users that her father was obsessed with researching, and he kind of dragged her out on this adventure. They go, and it turns out that they kind of went toe-to-toe with ancient Jedi, and there's this kind of confusion about, you know, who was on the light side, who was on the dark side, who was using the Force correctly, and, you know, history isn't always clear. It was kind of like the theme, but the leader of the Ordu Aspectu. So it's R-U-R. So I never know how to, it's R-U-R. He kind of downloaded his consciousness into this crystal. And so she gave her father, or she turned in a fake and then she kept the real one.
Got it.
Yeah.
That's a shifty move. Okay. So she wants, what she wants to do is have this crystal unlocked and release this, the essence of this Jedi Master for Luke. But in order to do that, she needs to visit this, the queen on this planet. I can't remember the name of the planet. And we're reminded in the book to not bother trying to pronounce the name of the queen. So we'll just call her the queen. We can call her Queen K. How about that?
Sure. It's hard. Citadel of Cathathatan.
Cathathatan. I don't know.
Cathatan.
So one night a year, the queen entertains people from across the galaxy who have these neat things. It's almost like the Star Wars version of Dragon's Den, where right. The queen will just, well, she'll hear with these, what interesting invention or innovation you've got to offer. And in this case, Aphra wants to use Luke as a force user, and one of the only force users left out there, or a Jedi in training, to entice the queen. And at first she's not interested, but then Luke gets a little bit aggressive and force pushes somebody away from Aphra. I think it's the Queen's Guard who may have been I guess the Queen's Guard was getting a little bit too personal for Luke, and he gave him a little force push. And then the Queen goes, oh yeah, forget these other people, everybody out. You've got my interest now, kid. And so I guess that's the deal, right? Aphra will turn Luke over to the queen, and the queen will unlock the crystal.
Right.
But what's in it? What's in it for Aphra?
What is in it for Aphra? So, she's really looking for, you know, as a scoundrel, she's really just looking for, I guess, money for, you know, some value out of this artifact.
Like, is she expecting the queen will give her a sum of money?
I think so.
I guess that's what she's after. That's what these treasure hunters are always after.
Right. I mean, she, you know, on her arc, she just got her, like, I guess her Star Wars version of a doctorate. You know, she's a doctor again. She got that back. So, you know, she's just looking to, I guess, pawn this off on the black market.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. And so that's more or less where the issue ends. We kind of get left on a bit of a cliffhanger. The queen is interested in Luke, but she, before we really learn what her motives are, we see that she has her minions kind of harvest the life force of all the people that live in the kingdom, the village nearby, mm-hmm. and she kind of sucks in their life force. Like that, I guess that's what she feeds on, and she leaves the issue on an ominous note, saying that it's been a really long time since she's tasted Jedi. And so that doesn't spell good things for Luke at all.
Yeah, I'm like wondering like what she actually is. You know, like tonally they're going for this like vampiric, like a psychic vampire, where instead of, you ever hear that phrase?
Psychic, like, vampire? Scary. No, that's a scary combo of power.
It's a psychic vampire. It's, I think even Stephen King has done novels based on it. So it's like, it's a vampire that doesn't feed on blood. It just feeds on like psychic, like energy, like life force.
Okay. That's pretty much exactly what I would say is going on here.
Yeah. But you know, within the Star Wars context, like, is she a dark force user? Kinda. Is she just like, what exactly is this life force? You know, like, what's the, I'm curious if they're going to delve into that. Like, what is it that she's actually feeding off of? Because we haven't really gotten this mysticism or like this kind of take in the Star Wars world.
No, definitely not. Never. So it is interesting because she doesn't seem intimidated by Jedi at all. And she's made it's quite clear that she's gotten the better of at least one Jedi in the past. So she's clearly a force to be reckoned with. Now, I don't know how Luke gets out of this. If Aphra is going to leave him high and dry again. Because it seems like Leia, Han, and Sana are probably going to get on their horse to go help Luke. Because they've learned through Sana that... well, I guess they've learned that Luke took off with Aphra. which they just facepalm. Like, why would he go with her? For God's sakes. So they're going to take off to the rescue at some point. So I guess Luke will be bailed out by his friends. But yeah, no, this seems like a very cool new breed of villain in the Star Wars galaxy. They're not Sith. They're not whatever the Knights of Ren are. This is something very different, very new that we haven't seen before. Where do you think this is going?
Honestly, I don't know. And I think that's what makes it so exciting.
has part two been released yet?
So yeah, so I've read part two, so I don't want to give too much away. It kind of delves a little more into the morning after, but you know, it goes kind of more into you know, what the queen, what her intentions are with Luke, and you know, kind of builds the tension. You know, it's about getting Sana, Leia, and Han to the Citadel. It's kind of like the in between before everyone kind of shows up. A little more stuff with Krasantin. So I don't want to give away too much, but yeah, it develops a little more.
Cool. I mean, I think we'll probably try and tackle part two next time we get together. I guess a couple small other observations. How about Luke in a space tux? Have we seen a space tuxedo before?
I don't think so. Spiffy. I liked it.
Yeah, I mean, he must have felt like a total fish out of water.
Not a foreign boy in that suit.
No, definitely not. Like, that was quite the suit, quite the getup that Luke was stuffed into. Maybe we saw something like that in Revenge of the Sith in the opera scene. And maybe we'll see something like that in The Last Jedi. We've seen a lot of images from the Vanity Fair piece that shows the planet Canto Bight. That's going to be a very casino-ish planet. So I'm sure there'll be some spiffy looking people. But man, Luke in a space tux, he looks sharp.
Yeah.
go ahead.
There's a couple of things I know that I really liked. You know, I like the exchange between Sana and Han. You know, he was very pushy trying to like get her to reveal how she knew Aphra. And I guess she was very shy about revealing her relationship with Aphra and kind of their history.
Right.
Because I know Leia knows at this point. From Rebel Jail. Like, Leia knows their history, but I guess no one else does. So I was curious, you know, as to why exactly she's hesitant. You know, I don't think it's explicitly that, I don't know. I mean, is Star Wars going into this, you know, same-sex relationships aren't okay in some planets? Like, are they going to tackle it like that? Or is it more so she doesn't want to be associated with the more scoundrelly, seedier side of Aphra? What, I don't know. What do you think? Like,
I would think that it's more option B, that she just doesn't want to admit that she got so close and or was so tight with someone who's so sketchy.
Right.
I would think that's it. I don't think they would paint being in a gay relationship as something that's taboo. At least,
right. I mean,
not yet. I'm
hoping,
anyway.
Yeah. I mean, I'm hoping it's not A. Yeah. I'm hoping it's what, you know, that second bit.
they would have to, I think the Star Wars galaxy has to introduce a bunch of gay couples before they start discriminating against those couples.
Exactly.
let's take it one step at a time here.
One thing there. Yeah. Oh, totally. Because, you know, because when you look at Aphra in her comic, she's so open, and it's such a non-issue that I feel like it would be out of place if it were to become an issue.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
if there was another thing. Are you a Battlestar Galactica fan at all? I feel like I've asked you that before.
I don't know if you have, but the it's sort of a weird answer. I have every episode on my hard drive, so I never caught it in its first run, and I've never seen the original from the 70s. But the I'll put the modern in quotes version of Battlestar Galactica, I still have every intention of watching, but I've just not fully gotten into it yet. I've watched maybe 3 or 4 episodes and I've liked them, but again, excuses, time commitments and life getting in the way. But I liked what I've seen. I just need to commit to watching more. So there's a convoluted answer to a simple question.
Well, the only reason why I bring it up is that I don't know if this is the artists kind of paying homage to it, but the Queen's guards have a very Cylon-esque helmet. Like before the Cylons become humanoid, they were much more metallic.
Yes.
And more robot. So the guard kind of has like this crisscross visor in the helmet.
Yeah, I thought that this is what happens when sort of a Mandalorian breeds with a Cylon.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
That's kind of the take I had on that.
Yeah. I just thought that was cool. Yeah, maybe they were referencing Mandalorian, but maybe, you know, I imagine sci-fi fans are the artists and writers as well. So maybe they're paying homage to, you know, the sci-fi genre at large.
Yeah, maybe. A couple observations on my end. It's something that I know some Star Wars fans were sensitive about with both Rogue One and The Force Awakens, in that in the quote-unquote, you know, melting pot scenes where we see a lot of different species intermingling, we didn't see very much of the classic aliens, Rodians and Nikto and Weequay and all those things. They're nowhere to be found in the new Star Wars. But in Screaming Citadel, we've seen a couple. We saw a Toydarian. Let me just flip through here. I know there was two or three different species that we
go, there's a Gungan.
Was there a Gungan? I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, the page right before the Queen is introduced, he's standing next to Luke. Top left corner.
Let me dig that up. Oh yeah, there's a Gungan there. Yeah, there's a male Twi'lek. There's the Toydarian. The page before that, we have a Quarren and we have a Bith. So a lot of classic faces. And in the background there, there's a Aqualish, which is Pondababa. There's a Rodian in the background. Two of them, in fact. Three, four, five Rodians. I'm just doing this now.
Yeah, there's a lot in here. There's kind of packed into these panels.
So yeah, there's something there for the jilted Star Wars fan who doesn't feel like the new movies are paying enough homage to the old species. On that same page with the Gungan, I see, why can't I remember Akbar species? Mon Cal?
Mon Cal. Oh, there it is. Yeah. See, they're kind of hiding. Oh, they're kind of all over.
So there you go. All those jilted people who feel like Star Wars is hiding the old classic aliens. Oh, these guys, Marco Cicchetto and Kieran Gillen, they'll bring a big smile to your face here. And lastly, I know we get reintroduced to BT and 000, but it's been a while since we've seen R2 and 3PO. So going back to, what was the arc where they hijacked that Star Destroyer?
The last flight of the Harbinger?
Yeah. So at the end of that, 3PO is sort of taken captive by that elite group of stormtroopers, and R2 sort of outfoxes Luke and takes off in his X-Wing by himself to go get 3PO. And that was in, what, issue 25, 26, something like that, 27?
Yes, something like that, yeah.
So it's been a while since we've seen anything from R2 and 3PO. I'm starting to miss them.
Yeah, well, I think it's funny. I think they're coming out with a like a one-shot droid comic.
Is that
maybe
right?
Maybe that's their way of making up for it.
I didn't even know about that.
Well, yeah, you know what? I don't think we could. Yeah, we definitely didn't cover it in news. And I think I just read it today. I think I was going through that app I was talking about, and I was just like typing in Star Wars so I could add like the Cassian one shot and the Mace Windu series. And I think I saw that's on the calendar.
Okay, cool enough. I'll check if it's R2 and 3PO. I'll definitely be checking that out. All right, so that's it. I think we're done here with Screaming Citadel Part 1. I this one gets at least 4.5 stars for me. This was a great kickoff to what I'm hoping is going to be kind of a really fresh and I want to stop short of saying groundbreaking. That's used too much in comics, but I think this has the potential to add a really cool new wrinkle to Star Wars.
Right. I think it's definitely fresh. Maybe it's not groundbreaking to comics, but I think it's close to groundbreaking because it's just so different for Star Wars. So yeah.
And again, the art alone, if you can't read, just pick up the book just for the art. It's spectacular. And I'm kind of bummed out that Chichetto is not doing the art throughout the entire arc. Because there's only one way to go, and that's down. I mean, as good as the art's been in other books, like for me, this is the nicest Star Wars book in the new canon. But anyway, that'll do it for this week. Steve, thanks for coming by.
Oh, absolutely. Happy to be here. Thanks.
And for everybody else out there, I hope you guys did A New Hope proud on its 40th birthday and did something in honor of one of the most influential movies of all time. And at this point, we'll just say go check out StarWarsCommonwealth.com. If you got nothing going this weekend, well, you can fill up your podcast playlist with the goodness offered by the Star Wars Commonwealth. Go check that out, StarWarsCommonwealth.com. And otherwise, we'd love to connect with you on the Twitter machine. Steve, where can you be found?
I am at Joango Fett.
And I'm at Tumbling Saber on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Come check us out. We'd love to chat Star Wars with you. And until episode 77 of the Tumbling Saber podcast, we're going to wish you a great weekend, and we'll catch you next week. You've been listening to Journals of the Willing from the Tumbling Saber team, a member of the Star Wars Commonwealth Podcast Network. Learn more about the network and its members at StarWarsCommonwealth.com.